Hey, everyone. We're so glad you're here. I'm Alisa Monjadas. I'm a marketing leader and executive coach.
I'm Courtney Copeland, and I'm an accountability and wellness coach.
And I'm Dr. Mirari Simeon, an activator of talent, HR executive, author, and working mom.
If you're anything like the successful multicultural women we interview on the What Rules podcast, you've learned that you can't do it alone. And we teach women like yourself to outsmart the game to get ahead in your career.
We're really talking about those rules that we grew up with as women and the expectations that have been placed on us.
Our mission is to change the face of leadership at What Rules podcast. As you listen to our talented guests, take note and take action. Go ahead, go and break those rules. It's Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. This year's theme, Advancing Leaders Through Innovation, honors the visionaries and leaders who have contributed to our economic prosperity and technological advancements. That's certainly true for our guest today, Denise Bobrody, who came to the U.S. as a young Vietnamese refugee. And she was the first in her family to attend college and now has a rewarding career in tech. We hope you find her story as inspiring as we did.
My friend just recently introduced me to her facialist, and I went, and it was like way too expensive. And the facial person said, you should come once a month because your skin, I guess, like changes over every 4 weeks. And she's like, but if you want, you can come like quarterly, depending on your budget.
Well, here's a question. How much do you spend? I only go once a quarter, and I love Anna, who's my Russian woman. She does all the extractions, and it's less than $100.
Oh, what?
You don't have to spend a lot of money in New York City to have a good routine. And people that once you go once a month, I think that's too much.
Okay.
Wow. And $100, I'm still stuck on the $100. I'm just like,
yeah.
Yay.
I don't even think, I think I spent like 90 something, and then I tip.
Oh.
I don't even think it's 100 yet.
I think it was like 250 for me. And I was like, I can't do this monthly.
Oh, my gosh.
No, Anna's awesome. I've been going to her for the last, 5 years. And you don't need to go but once a quarter.
So there you have it, Alisa.
Okay, maybe I need to find someone else.
There's the truth.
Yes. Either that or you're going to have to travel to New York.
So if you're based here in New York City, I was going to say, I'll give you the details, but you shouldn't be spending that much money. And what you need them to do is to do like a deep cleanse and to do the extractions. I didn't do it so much in my 20s and 30s, but I would say between the 40s, I definitely started to do it more regularly.
Yeah.
Because your skin ages and it's just the extraction just gets everything out.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, that's the painful part. Like the massage part is wonderful, but then they're like picking at your skin, things that you didn't even know were there.
No, but if you get a good person, it's not going to hurt.
Okay,
it hurts a little.
Well, that's what I was going to ask y'all. Does it hurt?
It's almost like getting your eyebrows like waxed or threaded or something. Yeah. It's like that kind of hurt.
Yeah, it's just a tiny little hurt. Mm. Courtney, no pain, no gain.
I was going to say that next. I was like, that's probably what this is. No pain, no gain. I'm inspired.
Denise Brody, I'm the CMO for Calibra. We are in the data intelligence space. I'm based here in New York City. All the hats I wear, there's so many. First of all, definitely mother, wife, sister, friend, coach, mentor. And I would definitely put it in that order. But I think that's what makes life so fulfilling is to get to wear so many hats. So I was born and raised in Vietnam. We escaped from Vietnam in 1979. I lived in refugee camp as a kid for about 6 months in Malaysia. And then from there, I got sponsored by my great aunt to Virginia. And I've had an opportunity now to live so many places in the U.S. It's been a lot of fun. The Carolinas, California, Indiana, and now New York City. And based on, you know, my journey to the U.S., definitely grateful that I got to come to a place that was so open at that time to receive immigrants as well as have the opportunity to live the American dream.
Having exposure to different cultures, even just different states within the U.S., I don't know if y'all feel this way, but different states definitely have different cultures.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious, One, what rule have you broken to get ahead in your career? And has your location influenced that at all?
Yeah, you know, it's not just location. I've had a chance to work internationally as well and also be part of international companies. So even when I started my career doing consulting work, I worked for a little small company called Clarkston. So happened the first job they sent me, I got to go to France and then to Japan and then Thailand and train people that were actually from these countries doing some enablement on one of the tools that we had as part of it. And then working at SAP, literally, you know, German-based company, 120 plus countries, I ended up traveling over 30 countries for work.
Wow.
And for 2 years, it was so amazing. It was getting on to the Fast Growth Markets program where I got to work in Russia, Turkey, Brazil, and China. And I think that just changes your perspective and just completely how you see the world as well and how you see and work with other people. What I also learned is that talking about superpowers, just owning your own power, being who you are, being authentic. And part of this is getting to engage with so many different people and so many different cultures. Like I joined an Israeli startup company and everybody was very straightforward, very direct, argued in every meeting. And it was something that was very dear to my heart and how I grew up. So it made it easy to be authentic as part of it, right? And you pick up certain things, like working for a German-based company for 15 years. Like I am rarely late to a meeting. If I'm on time, it's late. I'm usually like a couple minutes early. And I get really annoyed when people are late as part of that. So
I'm just really curious, how did you exercise your power given that you've worked in so many different cultures and environments globally?
When I was growing up, because I was with a single mother and a very strong woman, no, at that point in time, was just not a yes yet. And so I kind of took that into really the way I worked as well, is I figured between all of the different roles and different opportunities, like take the risk. If you fail, worst case, you go backwards. If somebody tells you no, just come back and ask later on, right? Once you get a little bit more under your belt. And that was always my mindset. I just, maybe it's bad, but I've never had the fear. I failed a lot in my career and I'm okay with it. And also in life, it's not just careers, it's everything.
It's taken me a long time to be okay with failure. I'm still not. I pretend like I am, but I'm not really that good at it yet.
I think failure, Lisa, is so good. It really keeps you humble and it makes you want more, right? And to do more. Like every day I get up and, you know, don't forget, I've been now in the tech space and the B2B side for 27 years. And I get up with this mindset, I get to do this. Mm. And if there's something that I failed at, I'm always asking people, give me feedback. Like, how would you improve it? I journal every day. And sometimes, like, if I did something that I didn't think was like a good quality, I have a high bar on quality, I'll replay it. And I'm like, I would improve it this way the next time. And I think failure is very good. I think that we are way too caught up that failure is a bad thing, right?
When I first came to the U.S., one of my best friends who continues to be till this day is Hong Kim Pham. She's also a young Vietnamese who escaped with her family from South Vietnam after the fall of Saigon in 1975. And she just came out with a book last year that is called Refugee Girl. They called us the boat people. So I know you like to read, and it's her memoir, but I thought it was just interesting because I have really dear friends who I grew up with for, I would say, probably the first 10 years when I came to the U.S.
Awesome. I'm going to add it to my reading list because, you know, part of my, one of my life goals is I've written a couple of business books, but I wanted the third one to be a memoir on just my escape.
You should do it.
just in my family. So, but I want to read her book. I'm curious.
Yes,
I'm always
curious.
Yes,
definitely. I'll send you the information. I thought it was, I knew her, like I said, God, now over 30 something years, but to really read her story, it's a different level of really understanding where she came from. So I think you'll enjoy it. And hopefully we could get to read yours sometime.
Yes, when I retire. It's too busy now.
If there was one rule you could say you broke to advance in your career, what would it be?
There's been quite a few. But I would say, you know, the stereotype, right? I mean, like, we're all sitting on the Zoom, but you didn't have this advantage prior to the pandemic. And look, you know, I'm all but 5'3 on a good day. And being petite and little and being in the business world, I used to joke about it. And the 27 years, it was like I was so used to being the only woman in the room, the only minority in the room. You know, sometimes because I'm vertically challenged, I'll walk into a room and people, they don't, it's not that they're not trying to see you, they just don't see you. And or some guy that is 6 feet plus is saying exactly the same thing. And you're like, really? And so I think there's so many rules, right? But the stereotype, the rule that, hey, being Asian and being an immigrant, you should be quiet. I'm definitely not quiet. I always speak my mind as part of it. And I think it's so important to have a voice. You cannot, I would say, get to professional success, whatever you deem it is, without breaking some rules.
Have you always been outspoken?
No. By the way, believe it or not, when I was growing up, and maybe it was combination of the situation as well with my mother, and it was my brother and I. And, you know, we grew up super poor, was on welfare, but I was a complete introvert when I was growing up. I only came out of my shell in college. And a lot of that was joined a sorority, joined different activities and things like that. And that was just a great eye-opener. And I think for me, the summer that I went to Russia and got to really see the world outside of my immigrant background was very eye-opening. So no, I was not always outgoing. And the interesting part is as I get older, I now have a greater appreciation. I'm going back slightly to being more introverted. And, you know, in my 20s and 30s, I was always like, you know, if there was a party, I was there. Not anymore. I like my downtime. And maybe the kids have just worn me out.
Denise, one of the things that we hear a lot as far as breaking the rules, being outspoken, having a voice, for you, what kind of help or support have you had along the way?
Oh, so many. I mean, it's not just women, it's also men, right? All my life, you know, I joined the Big Sister, Big Brother program when I was in high school. And it was so amazing just to have a big sister that actually did other things and helped me understand, hey, this is how kids normally growing up in the U.S. would be. That was definitely an eye-opener. When I went to college, I got even sponsorships from some professors. And I just remember I was trying to get this internship from American Express. And I came into the accounting information systems class and I asked the professor for a recommendation. And it was like a clock at our class at 8 a.m. And he remembered me and he wrote the recommendation like literally within that day. And I don't know if he knew it or not, but he was informally sponsoring me. And there's just been so much of that along the way. First job, I had so many, you know, not only mentors, but also sponsors, and all through SAP, even, you know, afterwards. So I don't think that ever stops. I just have so many people that have helped along the way. And, you know, I feel very fortunate. And my goal always, if I have the opportunity, I will always give back. So
did SAP have a formal sponsorship program? How did you go about getting sponsors when you were there?
We had a former sponsorship program and a mentoring program. Mm-hmm. And I remember in one of the first bosses I had there, Ron Jandas, he's now passed, but he was amazing. I just remember we're launching new products, new area technology. And, you know, I just remember him asking me, hey, we've got this little acquisition for SOX compliance. Will you take it? And I'm like, yeah, because I'm the 10th person you're asking and you're asking me to triple the revenue. And he started laughing. And I just remember I was thinking, I'm crazy for even taking. But I said to him, I said, look, I don't have any kids. I mean, this is a great risk. And if I do this, can I get sponsorship to think about the holistic selling to the CFO buying center? And I just remember us talking and he's like, yeah, take it. If you do well, I'll definitely sponsor the meeting. He ended up sponsoring the meeting with the global COO at that time. I pitched my business plan in 15 minutes, got like 20 headcount and set up the first COE that SAP had. And so it's always those little moments when you're like, everybody's like, how did you get that? And I said, I just asked. And why not? Like, worst case, somebody, you know, this comes back to the philosophy, have a voice, you know, be yourself and think about the things that you want and ask for it. And because if you don't ask for it, nobody can read your mind. If you don't get out there, you're not going to know.
I love that you talked about 100%. Negotiating with your sponsor, because we get asked all the time, how do I find a sponsor? And it feels really intimidating to people. And the fact that you not only had a sponsor, but you leveraged your relationship and negotiated, and then you like, I mean, what? I'm still in shock. I think it's really cool what you did.
But I think like sponsor and mentorship, though they're different, it boils down to every relationship has a give and take, right? You can't go in one direction. When I had mentors, I just remember there was one where I was trying to see the process of getting into a board. And she actually introduced me into the first advisory board that I got into. She has sat over 60 boards. But I remember looking at her website and I was like, it's not very modern. And she positioned herself as a digital board member. And so after I was just talking to her and I said, would you mind if I gave you some advice on your website and how you could redo it? And I introduced her to somebody that actually redid her website, activated her social network because she wasn't social. But I think it's like anything else, it's give and take.
That's a really good point. But like you said too, you want to give back and you're also a mentor yourself, but you won't just mentor anyone. So I'm curious, who do you prefer to mentor and how do you select those people?
I think that it's better to have somebody that you're mentoring that is one role behind you or maybe two. I think it's very hard for somebody that is coming out of school to end their first job to understand even what I do as a CMO, right? It's just too far. I think that, Courtney, for those, the goal of a mentor is also to give you some inspiration and direction. And it should be somebody that may be already in the executive seat and you want to get into the executive seat. They don't have to be in the exact executive seat, but they should be able to give you some advice. I remember I had someone help me, for example, with one of the negotiations when I was getting my first executive seat. And I was like, how do I negotiate the contract? What are there certain things that I ask for as part of it? And I really think that had I been trying to get mentored by somebody that was sitting on a board, that would have been too far. Mm-hmm. It would have just not been so relevant, because sometimes you just need advice.
And sometimes you as the mentor forget what you needed 10 years ago, 15 years ago. You forget those little nuances that can make such a big difference.
I really value this perspective. This is probably the first time I've heard mentorship relationships explained this way. And the timing of this is really funny because I was just speaking to a mentor that I met 5 or 6 years ago. And I remember saying to him on the phone recently, as like, there are certain things you tried to get me to see at that time, and it went like right over my head. But I knew it was valuable, but it was hard for me to see myself in that reality on that level. And yes, I finally caught up a bit to understand now, but wow, like that is really great advice that I want to share with a million people now.
For the first 10 years, you just think about getting every skill possible. And so you can build out your toolkit. As you get later in your career, I always tell people, then you have the decision point. You have to figure out what you love to do in life and what you're good at. And that will give you your long-term passion. But if you tell somebody that advice at the beginning of their career, like they're like, I need a job. Like, I am not trying to think about my passion right now. I need skills and I need to pay rent and I need to be able to invest, right? Whatever it is. But these things are just so important. And I think we kind of lose perspective on that. And, you know, I'm always very realistic for some of the early talent that come ask me, will you be my mentor? And I'm like, let me introduce you to someone else because I think it'll be a better fit.
I love that.
Can I actually give you a little bit of advice, Denise? as somebody who might be that person, or I was that person who would go to executives like right out of college and be like, hi, let's do this together. Like, I love that you refer them to someone else who they can probably relate to better. But one thing I valued tremendously, like right out of college, was still having someone like you, like all of you as a mirror that was still present. Like, maybe we didn't have weekly check-ins or bi-weekly check-ins, but sharing an article you wrote or saying, hey, I read this book and it really helped me with this perspective. And like recommending those little habits that you have. So like it'll catch on eventually. So yeah, I still think that like your presence is very valuable, even if you're not having a million conversations with them.
Yeah, by the way, I do that. I always give book recommendations for people. I always take the first coffee. I'll check in on them. It's just not that. Regular mentoring, because I really tell people, if you're really seeking a mentor, don't make it sporadic. Also, like, this comes back to the relationship. It's never like when you just need something. When I was doing more of the structured mentoring at SAP, I had people come once a month. And then before they came, they needed to put the topic that they wanted to discuss. And then we would do some exercises, right? Like, if you wanted to increase your executive footprint, there was one mentee that I had. It was like on a spreadsheet. We would go through, list the top 10 people this individual wanted to interact with, red, green, light it, and then we would monitor that. So it's very specific. And that's what I'm saying is mentoring is not just about showing up randomly. I like to be very systematic about it because I want to make sure that it helps the mentee get to their goal, right? So typically, whether it's for the first year, fifth year, whatever, it's every month or year we're looking at what do you want to accomplish. But for the rest of the folks, I'm always, here's a great podcast. You know, there are folks that work for me. I'm always posting stuff. I'm like, go read. This is so good. Go listen to Scott Galloway. He's my alter ego. I've always wanted to say that in public.
He's very cool. I'm a big fan of Scott.
Yes.
Denise, one of the things that we know, obviously, from research is that multicultural women continue to voice that they want to continue to advance in their careers. However, one question that we continuously get is, especially from women who are planning to become mothers at some point, or are new moms, or maybe they're not new moms, but they're struggling with things at work. Can you share with us your perspective and from your career when you had your children?
Yeah, so I'm very fortunate. Two lovely kids and a super supportive husband. Now they're tweens. Now they have different problems. They're 13 and a 14 who's almost 15. But at the beginning, it's all about the relationship you have, who you marry. And if you decide to stay as a working woman, it's so important they're invested in your career. I was traveling sometimes 50 to 70% when the kids were younger. We always had a very set up structure, right? And of course, the infrastructure is also important. Everybody's trying to do everything, but you also have to have a little bit of awakening, which is you're not going to be able to do everything. So for me, it was like I wanted to really progress in my career. So I had the housekeeper, I had the nanny, I had my husband. Literally, he was working startups as well. So he was super busy. But we really spent the time to say, okay, maybe on Monday and Fridays, because those were easier days for me where I could be the one to take the kids to school or up with the kids. And the other 3 days, it would be the blend of my husband or the nanny as part of that. And I just think having that, setting the expectations, and also being okay that you can't do everything. I just think like you just have to prioritize. And I think we're just trying to do too much. And there's no such thing as being perfect.
It kind of goes back to what you were saying earlier about failure, right? Like, It's about, it gives you an awareness of your strengths, your gifts, your passions, your desires. And then you take all that information and decide, okay, how am I going to reconcile this and navigate around it? And then if I have a partner, how are we going to do that together? And I would imagine it's a constant trial and error along the way.
Yeah. I worked for one awesome woman. She was Miss Calgary at one point. She gave me the best advice. She said, there's always three things in life, your health, your family, and love. Mm. And if you're a working woman and you want to be at the top of the ladder, you can't have it all at once. You can have two out of the three. So if your family's fabulous, it may be that you're not going to the gym and working out and taking care of yourself too much, right? I think that comes back to one of my favorite quotes from Oprah, which is, you can have it all, just not all at once. And that's also okay. Elisa, back to what you mentioned, which is there's such a push for women to be perfect and perfect all the time. And we're so hard on ourselves.
Yeah. And it's crazy like how... this is probably a whole nother conversation, but just like men don't put the same pressures on themselves. Like I have a business partner who's a man and I will like take on all the failures of the company, right? And then and I'm wearing it and it's burning me. And he's like, what? Why? You're fine.
Yes.
And I'm like, why don't you feel this way?
I have a question, Denise. What would you say to those listeners who are early in their careers and just getting started? We talked about this before, Elisa and Madadi, how if you're in this grinding season when you're just getting started, it's like really hard to accept that you can't have it all. And I'm just curious, what would you say to someone who's in the grinding stages, still learning and paving a new path and also trying to balance the health and the wellness and maybe a new relationship or something?
Yeah. Courtney's like, quote unquote, asking for a friend.
I'm my friend. I am your friend.
I was like, this sounds familiar.
Remember? I am
she. She is
me. Yes, Courtney, I wish I took this advice. And now 27 years later, I'm very like, I really think about this, which is when I get impatient about something, careers are marathons, but we treat it like a sprint. Mm-hmm. So I always, it's all perspective. I tell a lot of my mentees, I'm like, look, you're going to work for 40 years. I just remember there was one woman, she called me and she's like, now I'm not going to get promoted because I'm going on maternity leave. I'm like, maternity leave is 3 to 4 months of your entire 40 years. It's going to be a bleep on your overall progression. Mm-hmm. It's all in our mindset. I literally look at this and sometimes, you know, it's like we're in such a rush. And what's the point of being in the rush? Like at the beginning of my career, I was in such a rush to get to the C-suite. And I now have been sitting here in the C-suite for 10 years. And I was like, why wasn't it such a rush? And we just have to remember, careers are, you know, it's like an endurance sport. You got to run it like a marathon. And it's more important to have the different experiences, help companies grow, have an impact. It's not about the title that you have.
My friend says, thank you.
Be patient. Be patient. And ironically, as I've gotten older, I've gotten so much more patient. I rarely get upset about anything. But, you know, when I was in my 20s, oh my gosh, it was like the sky was falling. And I was like, why did I react that way?
Darn it. I'm in my 40s and I get upset about everything in my 40s. I guess I'm like 20 years behind. Okay. So this has been really awesome, Denise. Thank you so much. I want to hear from you, Dr. Madadi. What is your takeaway from this conversation, everything that Denise has shared in the conversation for today?
Our theme is own your power. And even though we didn't speak specifically to it, everything that Denise talked about is about how she owned she owns her power. I mean, anywhere from just the way that she manages her work, you know, her life, right? These are the three things that, and I wrote that down, right? Health, family, love. I'm going to manage my power because I know that it's one of these and I'll lean on one or the other. And the way you manage your power in just the mentees, right? This is what I'm choosing. And I even love the fact that you said you used to be an introvert, then you're, you know, outspoken and now you're an introvert. You own it. So at the end of the day, it doesn't matter the experience that you're living through, is you own it. And when you own it, you fully own it and you live it. So that's what I got. And I think that's the beauty of it and the power of listening to stories like yours, because it doesn't matter the situation that you were in, whether at the time you were impatient or not, you owned it. And now you're able to look back and learn from it and live the life that you want to live.
I would say for the listeners, especially folks that are, you know, at the start of their career, work hard and have fun. And have friends at work. This past weekend, I was at a wedding in Baltimore, and last minute, my husband had a shuffle in his schedule. And I just invited one of my very good friends. I've known her for 26 years. We met on my first project, her second job, and she lived upstairs. And every 18 months, we take an epic trip around the world. We're usually gone for, you know, 7 or 10 days together. And I think, again, don't separate work and personal, because I think when they merge, it can be beautiful. And then I think the other thing is to really help multicultural women, help them get a voice at the table, help them get to the table. The more of us there are in executive positions and roles that have impact, we can change who sits in the boardroom. We can change who sits in the leadership room. We can change who makes decisions for a company.
Want more advice on how to break the rules and outsmart the game to advance your career? Check us out on Instagram, YouTube, and our website, whatrulespodcast.com, for more insight from our guests and hosts, and join our community on LinkedIn, where we discuss rule-breaking strategies for multicultural women. What Rules is a project of Zara Consulting and is supported by the amazing team at Stories Bureau. This episode was produced by Alexandra Uresta, with editing and music supervision by Joshua Ramsey, and was engineered and mixed by Tim Ballant. Our podcast cover was designed by DeLeon Creative. Visit whatrulespodcast.com for more info, upcoming events, and all episodes of What Rules, including video, and make sure to give us a follow.